We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode number 59. My name is Andrew Rotondi. You can find me on Twitter at Yankees_talk, Scott Reinen at Scott Reinen, and also follow at Bronx Pinstripes for the website, podcasts, and everything else. Scott, what's up, man?
What's going on, Andrew? I am doing well, man. I'm glad you're back from the left coast and back on the right coast.
Yes, we will get into my trip out west in a second, but I first want to mention that this is the 59th episode of the Bronx Pinstripe Show. It's hard to find relevant players or players.
It's going to be hard to find from now on.
Right, right. But today is the Juan Rivera episode of the Bronx Pinstripe Show. You remember him?
A once promising young outfielder that came up through the organization. Absolutely.
He, in 2002, was named the number one prospect in the Yankees organization, which I think says more about the Yankees organization in the early 2000s than it does Juan Rivera.
No, I totally agree. I mean, he had his moments, but yeah, he never really panned out the way we all thought he was going to be. So, but yes, it does tell quite a story about what the Yankees organization looked like at that point.
Yeah, he was a one-trick pony. He had some pop, and that's about it. He was like the Dominican version of Shelly Duncan.
Oh, come on now, Shelly Duncan. Shelly Duncan had some big home runs.
So did Rivera. He was traded, Rivera was, for Javier Vazquez the first time around. So he was actually kind of an important piece in the Yankees 2000s history when you think about it. So, as you mentioned, I was out west this past week, so I feel a little bit out of touch with what has been going on. So I'll do my best to, I did my best to try and stay up to speed on everything. But I was in San Francisco this week. Have you ever been?
Never been to San Francisco. Been to L.A. And then north of San Francisco. I've been to like the Pacific Northwest, but no, not San Fran.
San Fran's awesome. I definitely recommend it for anybody who's looking to take a trip out to California. It's a very cool city if you can just ignore all the bums and the homeless people, which is hard because there's a lot of them. But other than that, it's an awesome city and it's a beautiful scenery. But you got wine country right there. A lot of stuff to do. So very cool. But I did take a trip to Twitter headquarters. I had a meeting there, which was quite interesting. I tried my best to get verified and get Bronx Pinstripes verified, but no dice on that.
Why not Bronx? I mean, I can understand why you wouldn't get verified, but why not Bronx Pinstripes? What'd they say?
They just kind of gave me the runaround. You know, there's a process for these things, and I kind of didn't really push the envelope, considering it was my first week on the job.
That's when you step aside when your boss goes to the bathroom. And you're like, look, this needs to happen. Do you not? People know who I am. People think I'm important.
I'm kind of a big deal.
Yeah, that's on the list this year. We're going to get verified somehow, some way.
Yeah, I don't even know what the process is for that.
I don't even know. What's the point of it? You get a blue check mark. Is that it? Is that what you get?
I think there's some additional like metrics or some sort of additional thing you get if you're verified.
Yeah. I know on Facebook you can do a live video stream from your page. So that's a plus. But Twitter, I know you get a blue check and people think you're cool and people think you're completely official. So at that point, if we get that blue check, watch out. Watch out. Bronx Pinstripes will be unstoppable.
You know what the best part about Twitter HQ was though? The food was unbelievable. They have a cafeteria that had prime rib, lobster and shrimp risotto. They had any type of sandwich, any type of salad, any type of soup that you wanted, and everything was free.
Yeah, you just walk up and take it, right? Because that's like one of the big things with a lot of companies out there, like Twitter, Facebook, and a lot of the tech companies. I know that they pour their money into employee benefits.
Yeah. The person we met with, she was like, you get here at 7 a.m. and they're making breakfast and they make dinner. So they're going like 12 hours a day and you can just take as much as you want. I don't think you can take it to go, but as long as you're in that building, you can take that food.
They had that movie with Vince Vaughn. I forget the name of it.
The internship.
Yeah, yeah. That he was taking to go orders from yeah. He was like taking the to go plate, and people were just completely.
He was.
You're definitely not allowed to do that. That was definitely one of the rules.
Yeah, he was packing Danishes in his backpack.
Yep. But that's pretty cool. I mean, I don't have free food even at my job, so I got to pay for everything in the fridge.
Yeah, I guess the only downside is in order to get that free food, you got to be at work.
Yeah, but I mean, they're at work on like scooters and I guess not scooters anymore, but the
Segways.
The Segways, yeah, not Segways, the other ones, the Back to the Future. The hoverboards, the ones that catch on fire.
Right. Yeah. Those were banned in a lot of places, weren't they?
I don't know. I'm not coordinated. I would eat shit if I got on one of those.
Did you see
things.
Mike Tyson eat shit on one of those?
Yes, I did. I would do the same thing.
My God, he went down like a ton of bricks.
It was pretty funny. There was a lot of good stuff. Social media took that one and ran very well. They did a good job with that one.
Yeah. He's a big guy now, too. He's put on some pounds, and he did not break his fall at all. I don't think there's much left in that brain though to really lose once he hit the ground, but all right, so how was your week while I was out of touch?
It was good. My wife was actually in Seattle, so she was over there too. And I was working on the house pretty much all week long.
2 weeks, so that was 2 weeks?
No, it was last week. It was last week because she was gone.
The week of
you had
Scott.
You had the week before. Yeah, last week was the week of Scott. So the week of Scott really just consisted of me working my ass off, transplanting trees and bushes and all sorts of stuff completely in the wrong weather, but doing it anyway because I had the time. And then I painted pretty much my whole first floor and getting it ready for the hardwood floor that's going in, that I'm putting in 800 square feet of hardwood floor, which is just going to be awesome. It's going to be so much fun to do. I can't wait.
So it was the week of Scott Extreme Home Makeover version.
Exactly. Exactly. I drank a lot of beer. I had to take care of myself. That was the biggest thing. I had to go to the grocery store, which was just sucked. I hated every second of that. It was stressful. Everything about it was just awful. So I ended up literally in the beer section, I went and got my beers. I got a whole bunch of pretzels and I got all the crap that my wife doesn't buy for me. And that's pretty much what I had. And then I ordered pizza and takeout. So it was awesome. Yeah, terrific.
You were like Kevin McAllister, except you were drinking beer as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah. And there were no intruders, but
Mattingly took care of them. So it was kind of a slow-ish week for Yankee spring training, but there was a couple things that definitely made headlines. The first of which being the fact that Gardner is still dealing with wrist injury from that playoff game, which was, what, five months ago at this point? The whole offseason, he was dealing with that wrist injury. Kind of caught everyone by surprise, and they sort of just threw it in there that, yep, he still has lingering pain there.
The crazy thing is they're calling it a bone bruise, and I've never even heard of a bone bruise that lasts 4 months, that lasts that long. And it's not like it's lasting during the season and right. You got to come back 4 months later. This is the off season where you're not doing anything baseball related. I mean, especially him.
Except getting treatment.
Getting treatment, you know, exactly. Getting a little R&R, maybe lifting some weights, but that's it. And, you know, just trying to condition yourself. So to me, that is very concerning that it's still an issue. And, you know, I don't know if this is the Yankees just saying this is it's a bigger issue than it is to kind of set us up for something. And he just has a little discomfort and they were just kind of waiting just because they could. Because I think with position players, you can wait longer. And I mean, let's all be honest. Brett Gardner hasn't had the greatest second halves in his career, so maybe this isn't the worst thing in the world that he's getting a late start.
No, but the injuries with him, it's just one thing after another.
And yeah, if it's a bone bruise, it's just so weird.
To his credit, he usually plays through them, and I do give him a lot of credit because plenty of guys don't play through it. Like, for instance, Jacoby Ellsbury does not play through little bumps and bruises. Gardner's a gamer. You can never question his effort. But he does break down. He's that type of body. And injuries seem to really affect him as the season goes on. So a bone bruise, you're right. I don't know how it's lasted this long unless he was doing something in the offseason that he shouldn't have been doing.
Yeah. I mean, they're going back to the playoff game, so they're saying that's what it was. And if it is a bone bruise and it's still there and it's going to linger and it's in his hand, you know, that's going to affect his batting quite a bit. And that's obviously where we're having the issues with him. So I really do hope it's something that just completely heals, and they just, you know, they're just being very careful with the bruise to make sure that it's completely healed before he starts up his activity. I heard that he's going to be back in the cage and maybe, you know, taking some swings this week as well. So, you know, that's optimistic. I think the Yankees, if there was any kind of potential that it would get worse or swelling or anything like that, they would not do it. So hopefully him going back to activities won't re-aggravate.
You know, he has that oven mitt. He needs a body mitt. He just needs one over his entire body. That's what they should have put him in the offseason and just let him hibernate, come back rejuvenated for February. Clearly that didn't happen. More injury news is that your favorite player of all time, Nathan Eovaldi, has a little bit of a groin strain, and he missed his first live BP throwing session because of this groin.
Oh no, he missed his first live BP throwing session.
You know who this is?
Oh yeah, we're going to go to Pavano because he missed a batting.
Oh, Pavano 2.0.
Because he missed a batting practice session.
Because it's the injury at the end of last year.
It is still February.
Spring training.
It is still February.
I mean, couldn't have got off to a worse start for your guy.
Totally non-related injury. Obviously, the groin injury means he was just having a lot of fun in the offseason. So give him a little time to get back into
maybe
the swing.
Maybe Gardner was having some self fun in the offseason, and that's why his wrist is still banged up.
Well, there you go. Because of all these, at least you know, taking care of business the way it should be taken care of. So, look, I absolutely say there's nothing going on with this until there is something going on. It's a small little thing that is just bumping him back, so it's not a big deal.
I agree. I just like calling him Carl Pavano because it angers you.
It doesn't anger me because it doesn't make any sense.
Except the fact
that you just think he looks like him.
He looks exactly like him and is now experiencing annoying injuries, much like Carl Pavano. All we'll need is for Nathan Eovaldi to complain about his contract, and then we'll have it'll be the trifecta of Carl Pavano 2.0.
Nathan Eovaldi would never complain about his contract. He's way too humble for that. Way too good of a guy.
I do agree with that. I don't know. Maybe not seeing him pitch for a while has gotten him back on my good side, but
you should be happy after. I mean, the most recent memories of him pitching should be positive memories for you, because after the All-Star break, before that weird injury that happened that nobody saw coming, he was actually very effective. And not in a Nathan Eovaldi way of being effective, but actually a starting pitcher in the Major League Baseball being effective. I mean, he was actually very good in July and August.
Well, was he pitching more than five innings? I can't even remember at this point.
No, but I don't even think he had a loss after the All-Star break.
Yeah, I know his record was great. It was like 14-2, but he averaged 5 and a third like innings pitched.
He had like a 3.5, 3.6 ERA. I think his I did some research. I'm not thinking. This is all factual. his strikeout ratio per nine was up a strikeout and a half in the second half. We're seeing a different Eovaldi. If you do not believe this, please go read today's Monday that we're recording this. But go read Adam Weinrub's future column today, and it dives into the Eovaldi splitter and the fact that it does have some unique action to it, and it's a very unique pitch. But definitely go give that a read, because it's very interesting to see, you know, kind of the evolution of Nathan Eovaldi over last year and what Rothschild and Eovaldi worked on. And I think it just proves that we have more positive things to come en route to a 20-win season.
I just really question his potential ability to be a complete pitcher. He's got the talent. He can throw 97 miles an hour. That's all great. But we see it. Well, he'll lose it for an inning. He'll lose control, and he'll leave balls out in the middle of the plate. And it doesn't matter if you're throwing 97, 98 miles an hour. If it's right over the middle of the plate, it's going to get hit. He gave up a lot of hits last season, threw a ton of pitches because he was afraid to attack guys. He was falling behind 2-0, 2-1. So I question his ability to really learn how to pitch. We saw it in spurts last year. Like, you're talking about these stats in the second half. That's all great. That's all great. Can he do that over a 30-start season? We'll find out.
But here's what we're looking at. Let's dive into Nathan Eovaldi a little bit more, by the numbers, if you will. I wish we had a segment that was called By the Numbers, so we could put some like flashy By the Numbers.
Now we do. We have a segment now called By the Numbers.
Yeah, we need some like British guy coming in and go By the Numbers. All right, so now By the Numbers. If you're looking at July and August of Nathan Eovaldi, we're gonna take September out of it because he only had one start. July and August. July four wins, zero losses, 3.09 ERA. That's six games started. He threw 35 innings. Okay, so it's just under six innings per start,
is not good.
It's one inning under, which is, I understand. He definitely needs to get more length. There's no doubt about it. Everybody knows that. He needs to get more length, which means he needs to stop giving up so many hits. That's the biggest bugaboo. If you look at him, if you look from May, June to July, the innings pitch to hits ratio starts to go down. You have in May 35 innings, 45 hits. June 25 innings, 29 hits. July 35 innings, 37 hits. So August, it's about 31 innings, 28 hits. Huh?
About a 1-to-1 ratio. His hit.
Right, but I'm saying it's starting to go down. So by the time he gets to July and August, but in August he was under a hit per inning.
So how many walks per inning, or what was his WHIP over those months? If you have that.
WHIP in July was 1.37, August was 1.263, and every single month it went down. So from April, March, 1.6, then 1.5, then 1.4, then 1.3, then 1.6.
Yeah.
So progressively throughout the season, he improved in every category you could possibly want a pitcher to improve in. The only thing that stayed very true was the innings pitched. He was averaging about – he's still throwing a ton of pitches.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not just WHIP, because we saw it go down to 1.2, which is actually a pretty good number for a guy like Eovaldi, but he was still only going 5 2/3 innings, and that was because he was going to a lot of 2-2, 3-2 counts, so he's got to really work on that. He's got to spot his fastball early in the counts.
Well, and this also leads me to believe that I'm happy that he's getting that splitter down, because what Eovaldi needs more than anything, and I think the casual Yankee fan who sees him and sees that he throws 100 miles an hour says, this guy needs to strike out more people. That'll make him a more effective pitcher. Well, I say that is not true, because the way that you look at Eovaldi, the way that he pitches, the way he could become more effective is by becoming more efficient, which means that splitter needs to turn into more ground balls earlier in the count, which will get him out of innings a lot sooner than a strikeout would.
Yeah, and he'd be way better off spotting at 94, 95 than throwing as hard as he could 99.
Well, yeah, exactly. If he can't control the 99, but you know, again, you're right. You're absolutely right. He needs to spot that fastball. He has fastball command is going to be extremely important for him. But having that secondary pitch, his out pitch that everybody needs, especially starting pitchers that need to be able to command that, is extremely important. And we saw the progression with him with that splitter. And we're talking about a number four starter, by the way. This is a number four starter that, look, I understand that I have a fanboy thing with Nathan Eovaldi, but take Nathan Eovaldi out of the picture and just make this our number four starter. Those numbers are very good for your number four starter. That's something that you want to see, and you want to see progression. If you can get progression and you can get someone getting five, obviously you want six innings, but six innings, especially with the back end of the pen that we have, that's all you ask for your fourth and fifth pitcher.
Yes, we're in 100% agreement. You just have more confidence he can do it than I do. And I hope I eat my words. I hope sometime in July that you make me eat my words and you say, look, Eovaldi's averaging over six innings a start and he's got his WHIP down and he's not throwing 97 pitches through five innings.
So what would make you happy? Him averaging six innings? Is that like...
Over six innings. Get through the sixth inning.
Maybe now you're saying through the sixth inning.
Yeah, so six innings.
Okay, six full innings.
That's
what you want him to average.
I want him to average six full innings. I think that's a realistic goal for somebody who's his age and his caliber of stuff. He should be getting at least through the sixth inning, maybe an out or two in the seventh inning if he's having a good night.
I totally agree. I think that's exactly a mark that he should be at. I'm wondering also if we're looking at the way that the rotation is setting up, that and the way that the back end of the bullpen is set up, that Girardi and the powers that be will not start limiting a lot of these guys. We even saw that in the when he was having a good outing. Occasionally, when he was ready to go deep, they would pull him early.
Yeah,
Girardi does this all the time. It's true. I remember commenting to you about it.
Yep.
About you know if his pitch count. I remember him being pulled at like 85 pitches one game, and I'm sitting there just pulling my hair out.
Yeah, sometimes it's extremely frustrating. Girardi has a trigger finger a lot of times, especially with guys like Eovaldi, who he did not trust last year. He did not trust Nathan Eovaldi to get to fight through it. From that 85 to 100 pitch mark, Eovaldi fell off immensely. You know who also would fall off immensely was Pineda. That's why right. We saw Pineda get pulled so many times and like after 5 2/3 innings. And it's like, oh, he gave up one run on five hits. Why are you pulling them? It's because in a blink of an eye, he hangs a slider and he gives up a 3-run homer. And Girardi knows that. It is frustrating because sometimes he makes the trigger too quick. And a lot of times we weren't going to Betances or Miller in the sixth inning. We were going to Nick Rumbelo or James Pazos or some bum that would give up the game.
But so, let's get something straight. Get ready to see that even more this year because of the big three that are in the back. Because now we're going to have one flux inning, theoretically, one flux inning for a whole bunch of guys. And a lot of these guys are very talented. We're talking about Lindgren, Shreve, who had a phenomenal first half of the season. Guys that I'm not even talking about.
Yeah. The guys
they're going to be ready for one, two innings because I say two innings because – hopefully we can have at least two of the big three available each night.
Yeah, a lot of the guys that we'll see in the sixth inning are better than the guys we saw in the sixth inning last year, which is a plus. But do you remember last year that the Yankees, it seemed like they would never win a game if both Miller and Betances didn't pitch?
Yes, oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I hope
they had to get the ball to them. Yeah.
Right. I hope it's not the case where we have to get the ball to all three of them this year in order to win games. It's just not sustainable.
I agree.
Oh, your boy, why don't you give us a little taste of where you know I'm going next?
Ref Snyder!
We'll be seeing some time at the hot corner. What do you think about that?
I like it. Just give me I want any opportunity to see him on the field. If they're looking at him at third base, if that's an opportunity for him, and that's an opportunity for him to help the New York Yankees and not the AAA Scranton Wilkes-Barre team, then I'm all for it because I want him on this roster. He's at a point where he's major league ready, in my opinion, and I really think they just need to unleash the Ref Snyder. I don't even mind if they let's see him in the outfield a little bit. The kid played right field in college. He knows how to play the outfield. He could play it better than Beltran right now asleep. I guarantee it. So let's see it. Let's see him be the ultimate guy. I'm curious to see how he does at third base, though, because third base is a very different position than second.
Yeah. So I like the fact that the Yankees are exploring their options with Ref Snyder because they know his bat can make an impact on the major league level. We saw that last year, and you and I have discussed this 1,000 times. He can hit at the major league level. He just doesn't have a position. I like the fact that they're trying to explore other options to see if they can get him on the major league roster, maximize his at-bats. But why wait until the first day of spring training to announce that he'll be seeing time at
They announced that to us. We know that.
He said it's the first I'm hearing of it. You think that's...
Oh, I didn't hear that part.
Yeah. Do you think he was just sort of being tongue-in-cheek, or do you think legitimately that's the first time he heard of it?
I think if they were thinking about it, that they would give it to him obviously as early as possible.
Right? Yeah. So, I mean, if that's honestly the first... If he showed up to camp and they said, hey, Ref Snyder, you're going to be taking ground balls at second, but also at third base. And he was like, what? Then that's bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to give him opportunities there, unless this was just a decision that was very late, and they're like, oh, we have this guy, Rob Ref Snyder. Remember him? they might have forgotten about him.
They clearly weren't listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, because or else they would have known that Ref Snyder is an option to play other positions at second.
It is very possible they forgot about him. But they're like, oh, Bird went down. Bird was only going to play first base, but I know people were talking about him playing other positions because he could probably play third and probably right field. Maybe we could have Ref Snyder do that. Maybe he's an athlete. He's much better in the field than we thought he was going to be. Let's put him in other positions. Maybe he can flourish other places as well. it's a novel concept. I mean, it's a guy that really has no value other than putting him in the major leagues to create value as a utility guy or show that he can play another position, because right now you have no value. I mean, you've talked about this where, you know, Refsnyder, now that Castro's there, is the Yankees are not in a strong position to trade Refsnyder because they are chock full of second baseman and shortstops. So why do they, you know, the value to the New York Yankees that Refsnyder holds right now is not very high as a second baseman.
Nope.
You put him at third base and show that he can play third and show that he can play right field. Well, then you're talking about a guy who has significant higher value, and it's better for everything. It's better for the team because he can contribute, but it's also better for the potential to trade him because now he's looking like a more complete baseball player and potentially getting higher return for him.
Yeah, he's going to be 25 years old in about a month. So
he's no longer a prospect.
He's no longer, I mean, he's still obviously a rookie, but he's no longer a prospect where you can say, we're going to put up with some growing pains in the field just because he can hit for a while. If, you know, if you're a team trading for him, because he's not going to spend much more time in the minor leagues at this point. He's either going to be able to play defense at the major league level or he's not going to be able to. And that's sort of going to decide how his career goes. Usually it's the opposite way around, where guys can pick it and they can't hit. So he's in an interesting spot. I think that he just needs to play, average at best defensively.
See, I really do. I see him as a guy, and I keep talking about his athleticism, and I don't want to just I think it's so important in today's game, the athleticism that he has and just the hand-eye coordination that he's definitely shown. And he could be a Zobrist, a Martin Prado type of player that you can move him around. And let's give him the opportunity to become that type of player, because that type of player in today's game, with all the shifting, with all the, you know, with all the late inning substitutions, there's a lot more opportunity and there's a lot more value for a guy that can play different positions and give your club flexibility both at the plate and in the field. So he's a Swiss Army knife, or he could be a Swiss Army knife, I think, if they give him the opportunity. So I'm really hoping they kind of cut him loose.
Do you remember how I'm trying to think of the word for it, inconsistent Eduardo Nunez was in the field?
Inconsistent. That's very nice.
Right? And they put up with that for many, many games, playing him at third base. They played him at shortstop a couple times. They played him in left field,
I believe. Left field, yeah.
Yeah. You're telling me Refsnyder can't give you Eduardo Nunez-level defense?
That's an insult to Rob Refsnyder, in all honesty, because Eduardo Nunez is one of the worst fielders I've ever seen play baseball on that level. I mean, I don't understand some of the things that he did. It doesn't make sense to me how you get to that level of baseball and not be able to consistently field a routine ground ball. I mean,
he would mesmerize because his helmet would fly off every time he rounded second. They were like, wow, this guy's really fast.
But that's the thing. Maybe they were, I don't know if they were soured by him, because Ed Nunez, the biggest and really the only positive for Eduardo Nunez was his offense. You know, he could hit the ball. And he was a guy that was major league ready. His bat was major league ready. We knew that. And they put up with it because he could hit. And Rob Refsnyder is that guy, but he's more talented and more athletic and, to me, a better defensive player than Eduardo Nunez. And I think he could be more flexible because I think you could put him in different positions. So I think it's actually a good comparison, but I think he's a better defensive player.
So you and I are definitely on the same page with Refsnyder. Hopefully he can get his act together and play some decent defense, that is, and make the team.
He's not the one that needs to get his act together, by the way. The Yankees need to get their act together and give him an opportunity.
Yeah, he needs to prove he can play in the field, though. Because at least in their eyes, he has not done that yet.
He needs to prove them wrong, yes.
Yeah.
Refsnyder versus the world, baby. Let's go.
Can we get that on a t-shirt? All right, so David Ortiz, you saw him say he wants a standing ovation at Yankee Stadium, right? You saw that?
Yes.
What a jackass this guy is. I mean, talk about one of your all-time biggest hypocrites. The guy that said, I would never pull a Derek Jeter and announce my retirement and do a farewell tour and ask for all these gifts and ask for all this, you know, this love from the fans and everything. And then a year later, he goes and announces retirement like 5 months before the season and is planning a farewell tour. And then he's quoted as saying that one thing he's really looking forward to this season is a standing ovation at Yankee Stadium, which should never happen.
Should it won't. I mean, it says there's no should, could, would. There's nothing even on the realm of possibilities happening. First of all, David, Derek Jeter did not ask for any of this stuff. Derek Jeter was just on such a different level as a baseball player and as a human being that people gave that to him because they wanted to give this to him. Across the globe, they wanted to give this to him. It wasn't Derek Jeter asking for a farewell tour. It wasn't Derek Jeter asking for accolades and gifts at every stadium he went to. They were giving it to him because they respected him as a baseball player and how he conducted himself on and off the field. He deserved it, and that's why it was warranted. Do you think that Derek Jeter wanted that? Derek Jeter didn't want any attention in anything. His entire career, he has been very well known for not wanting attention.
Well,
so the fact.
All right, finish. Yeah.
Just the fact that Ortiz even brings Jeter into this conversation completely makes everything that he says after that just completely asinine, because you can't compare the two guys. You can't compare the two careers. You can't compare the two baseball players on or off the field. They're just not even remotely in the same stratosphere.
On a attention whore level, David Ortiz blows Derek Jeter out of the water. But when you said, I don't think Jeter wanted any of that attention, I disagree with you. I think he did want some of the attention, or else he wouldn't have announced his farewell tour. Maybe he didn't want that attention from every stadium that he went into, but he certainly wanted it from the Yankees fans, which I totally understand. The fans deserve to give it to him. They deserve to know it was Jeter's last year, just like they deserve to know it was Mariano Rivera's last year. But I think you're being a little disingenuous saying that Jeter didn't want any of that attention.
Okay, I'm not being disingenuous by saying that, because I don't actually think that he wants that attention. I really don't. I think that he understands the relevance and the monumental, just the capacity of him retiring. And I think a lot of that decision was more for us, because we want to see him away. And I think it was actually more of a selfless act than a selfish act, because we want to see him away more than he wants the attention. There you go, baby.
Derek Jeter announcing his retirement early and getting a farewell tour was a selfless act.
No doubt. Because Yankee fans across the nation went to the ballpark to see Derek Jeter off. And he did it as a favor for us so that we could see him one last time. I wish you know, there were more selfless baseball players, selfless athletes who would think of the fans first.
Yeah, Ortiz is definitely a selfish player. We saw that when he was barging into Terry Francona's press conference complaining he didn't get an RBI. I mean, every home run he hits, it takes him 45 minutes to run around the bases. And then not to mention the fact that he got no criticism from that PED list. Meanwhile, A-Rod was vilified from that same list. In no way, shape, or form should Ortiz receive anything but boos at Yankee Stadium.
And the other thing is, he acts like he wasn't on that list, but he was on the list.
Yeah, he totally denies it.
Black and white, on the list. You're on the list, bro. He denies the fact that it was steroids, and that, you know, anything there was no wrongdoing.
Yeah, creatine shakes.
It's just such nonsense. You don't show up on these lists for creatine. So. Look, he's a liar, he's a selfish player, and he's a complete narcissist. So the fact that he thinks that Yankee fans are going to give him a standing ovation, I don't know where he thinks he is and in what world, but I hope that he still thinks that's going to happen when he walks into Yankee Stadium, because he's in for a rude awakening.
But as far as the farewell tours go, I'm sick of them. I think we should do away with farewell tours. And I know it's kind of sounding stupid because Jeter and Mariano already got theirs, but I was even tired of the Jeter one. I mean, every stadium the Yankees went into, he was receiving these god-awful gifts. It was just, like, kind of painful to watch after a while. I could see maybe doing ceremonies towards the end of the season if a rival really respects the guy, like the Red Sox legitimately respected Jeter and want to give him something, fine. But to have Jeter receive something from the Chicago Cubs or the Seattle Mariners, where what connection to those fans and those teams does Jeter or the Yankees really have, kind of just annoyed me.
Well, the only thing I think you're discounting in that is that the spread and the reach of Yankee fans, because there are just so many Yankee fans throughout the nation. I mean, we're by far the largest fan base in Major League Baseball and probably sports. And there are Yankee fans that are transplanted, and maybe not even transplanted, but just exist in different areas because they're New York Yankees and they wanted to be part of that. So, you know, I think if you think about every single away game, I mean, the majority of our away games, the higher attendance comes when the Yankees are in town.
Yeah.
And it's because they are the New York Yankees. So, I mean, I see what you're saying, where it gets tiresome and it gets old, but it doesn't get old for the Yankee fan who grew up in the Bronx and lives in Dallas, Texas right now and is going to a Rangers game. So, you know, that's the only thing I would kind of counter to that.
I'm trying to think of equivalent players to a Jeter for a specific team. So like Chipper Jones to the Atlanta Braves. I mean, he was in a way their Derek Jeter. Or Craig Biggio to the Astros. Those guys didn't get farewell tours, did they? Or am I just not remembering them?
Well, Chipper Jones got gifts, definitely. I mean, the Yankees gave him something. Yeah, the Yankees gave him. I forget what the Yankees gave him, but they did say something to him. They gave him something.
All right, I just don't remember.
Biggio, no, but I think Biggio, when he retired, they were in the National League. I mean, again, the difference is the New York Yankee fan base is a hell of a lot larger than the Houston Astros or the Atlanta Braves fan
base. It's an X factor, definitely.
Yeah. It's also a day for that fan base to come to the stadium of the opposing team. So if you think about that, if the Texas Rangers were to give somebody, or Derek Jeter or something, chances are they're going to get a higher attendance if they announce it ahead of time that it's Derek Jeter, you know, that they're playing the Yankees and they're going to acknowledge Derek Jeter that day. So that's something it's a marketing dollar as well.
Yeah. All I can say is, David Ortiz, you can suck it. You're not getting any cheers from me ever.
I'll stand up. Boo.
It's almost better. It would almost be better if we could arrange for every fan in Yankee Stadium to just sit quietly as he walks out on the field and gets his gift, which they will give him a gift. You ready to preview the Texas Rangers?
Let's do it.
So as we've been going through all the teams in the AL, we're almost done with those teams. We're going to move on to the National League teams on the Yankee schedule soon, but we're going to do the Rangers and the Athletics today. The Rangers finished first in their division last year. They really got hot towards the end of the season, overtook the Houston Astros, but Baseball Prospectus actually has them going under 500, only 79 wins this year. Which to me kind of caught me by surprise, because they have Cole Hamels for a full season now, and they're going to get Yu Darvish back. So in a way, I think they might be better than last year.
Baseball Prospectus really had some head scratchers on their projections. If you look at all of their, if you go to their website and check out their projections for 2016 team season, a lot of what they picked just throughout the major leagues was very strange, in my opinion. But this is definitely one of them. I think the Texas Rangers have I agree with you. I think they have a better team because of the health. I mean, they're getting they have two bona fide aces now on their squad. Yu Darvish, healthy. Cole Hamels, there for a full season. He was one of the top, if not the guy, that was the major acquisition at the trade deadline. And the Rangers really swept in and got him when nobody was expecting them to even be a player. So I think them coming back with their offense, they're going to put up runs. The fact that they have two number ones really at the top of their rotation is scary, and I think they could have a good season. I think they're going to be better than 79 wins.
Yeah, I understand Darvish is coming off Tommy John surgery, so he's not going to be able to pitch a full 33-start season. But if they manage his innings right and have him fully rested going into the second half, I feel like they could really make a push and be a dangerous playoff team with Yu Darvish and Cole Hamels in a short 5-game series.
Yeah.
I mean, that's 4 games right there where you could be shut out. So
they should study the Washington Nationals and Steven Strasburg and what not to do.
Yeah. And you mentioned their offense, Prince Fielder, Adrian Beltre, Mitch Moreland, and they just signed Ian Desmond, I guess. So their offense should be pretty solid.
Yeah, and I think Ian Desmond actually really bolsters that offensive lineup too. Apparently, he's going to be playing left field. He's been a shortstop his career with Washington. He hasn't been a very good shortstop defensively, but he's always been able to swing the bat. I think he's won the Silver Slugger Award for the shortstop position in the National League for, I don't know, the past few years. He's definitely someone who can hit the ball, and there's no doubt that he's going to help, you know, bolster that lineup. And, you know, in the notes, you mentioned Elvis Andrews. Elvis Andrews is a very high talent. Yeah, if he can recover from what he, you know, kind of finished off last year, then he needs to then that could be a very scary lineup if he plays to his potential.
If you told me Elvis Andrews hasn't slept 1 minute since the playoff game 5 last year against the Blue Jays, I'd believe you, because that's haunting for a player.
It was hard to watch. It was really hard to watch. I felt bad for the dude. I don't feel bad for many professional athletes, but at that point, that was a guy I felt bad for.
Especially a guy who can pick it like he can.
Yeah, it just didn't make any sense. It was really about that moment.
Yeah, brain farts, mental mistakes, actual physical mistakes, just total breakdown. So, like you said, we'll see if he can recover. He's definitely tapered off, though. I mean, he had a really good start to his career. They gave him, I think, a 10-year contract. He was like the next big shortstop in baseball. And he's kind of come back down to earth, and he's just like an average player right now. But
he was one of those guys that was rumored to come over to the Yankees at some points too. I remember, you know, Elvis Andrews definitely got into discussions
because they wanted to offload that contract.
Exactly. And potentially playing second base. Even before Didi, he was a name that was coming up to kind of be the stopgap after Jeter. So this is a guy that's definitely had ties to, at least in rumors, to the Yankees. But you're right. The beginning of his career, I mean, he was supposed to be one of the next guys. I mean, he was really just an electric player, and he could steal a lot of bases. He could play, you know, a very good defensive shortstop, and he would, you know, he hit for average early in his career. But he's definitely fallen off, and I don't know if that's just because of injuries or he just really hasn't. And Major League Baseball has caught up to him, so I don't know. Hopefully he doesn't recover that and he doesn't live up to his potential for the Yankees' sake.
Yeah, but you and I agree the Rangers will be better than 79 wins.
Yeah, no doubt. I think I slot them at, like, again, I've said this, I think, for each division so far, and I'm going to say it for the East when we get there, but I think the entire American League is going to be a battle. I really think a lot of people are going to be just beating each other up. Each division seems very close. There's no real front runner, in my opinion, for any of these divisions. And I think there's just going to be a bunch of dogfights, and you're going to see, you know, 90 wins leading the American League, close to 90 wins, I think.
Yeah. Maybe one team always sort of pulls away from things, but there's no team that you can sort of project to be that. But you know what you can project? Is that the Oakland Athletics will suck, and they're going to suck, because I looked at their roster today. I recognized like three players.
I mean, their best player last year was Stephen Voigt, if I'm even saying that correctly. Mm-hmm. And I think he's basically a journeyman first baseman / catcher / first baseman / DH /
Scott day off guy. 2.0.
Yeah. And he was leading the American League in batting average, I think, for a long time. He had a breakout year, and it just screamed that my one spike Brady Anderson year, like, what's going on with this guy? You're scratching your head looking at him sideways. But he was their most effective player, and if that's the most effective offensive player at that point, then you're worried about your team for sure.
And you know Billy
Bean. Brett Lowry's gone. Brett Lowry's gone. So they're screwed. They're screwed.
You know Billy Bean. He's itching to make trades. He's like a fantasy football player who hasn't made a trade in 2 weeks, and he just needs to do something. Josh Reddick will probably get traded this season because he's a free agent after the year. He's a solid player. I could not imagine the A's would re-sign him. It's not like they're close to making a playoff run, so I don't expect them to re-sign him. I actually expect him to be dealt to a team that needs a little bit of an offensive jolt midway through the season. There's rumors, it seems like for 2 years now, that Sonny Gray will get traded. But I actually don't see that happening unless some team comes in and offers up their top three prospects, because Sonny Gray's not a free agent until 2020.
See, I think you and I disagree on this, and we talked about this when we were in the offseason talking about potential people to trade for, or you know, what's going to happen in the at the trade deadline. I think Sonny Gray is an absolute trade deadline guy. I think he's going to be – you're going to see the Athletics at the bottom of the – of the American League West and potentially out of the playoffs at that point, or even very close to it. And Sonny Gray is going to be a guy that everybody's going to be coming after. He's an absolute number one. He's got, like you said, he's controlled through 2020, which is extremely attractive. And, you know, he's a guy that can really bolster a rotation leading into the second half and making a playoff push. So I see guys giving up their, you know, top prospects for a guy like Sonny Gray.
Do you think there'll be a bidding war midseason for him? I just don't see that happening.
I do. Well, I think it depends on who's in it at that point and who's, you know, who's ready to make that leap. You know, who needs the one starter to make that leap. You know, there's always surprise teams. Every year we see surprise teams that are playing well. And, you know, I think it's just a matter of who those teams are and if they have those assets to trade. So, but I think he's, I mean, if you're looking at a guy who's worth giving up your top prospects for, you're looking at a guy who's controllable through 2020, yep. Who's a young starting pitcher. I mean, he fits the bill for everything you're thinking about.
I thought you didn't really like him though. Or am I mixing you up with, or remember on the trade deadline special that we did, it was Yumi and Rich. Maybe Rich didn't like him that much.
No. It's not that I don't like him. I do like him. I think he's a great player. I think that the way he pitches and his stature and everything about Sonny Gray leads me – and this is just me talking nonsense, but it's just my projection, you know. I think he's injury prone because of his stature and the way he throws.
Who isn't injury prone?
I know, but he's the type – the way that he throws, as hard as he throws, the type of elbow action he gets, I just don't see him having a long career. And I think he's very risky in that sense by giving up your guys. But a lot of people don't see that. You know, they don't see that injury risk, or they don't even play that injury risk game.
Right.
And they're looking for right now, and they're looking for what can happen. Yes, he's controllable for 2020, but can he help us this year and next year? Sometimes that's the only thing that matters. So we'll see. And, you know, I do think he's going to get hurt at some point just because of the way he does throw. So that was really my knock on him. It wasn't really a knock on him as a pitcher, just kind of his body makeup.
If you had – okay, what would you rather? This is a new segment. We have the stat segment, and we also have a what would you rather segment.
So if you're an announcer out there listening to this, we need to hire somebody to do our segments.
Let's play Would You Rather. Would you rather play 81 home games at O.co Coliseum or at Tropicana Field?
I think the Rays. The Rays have to. I think the Rays is the worst in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, just because it's indoors, it's just like depressing. But O.co Coliseum is not far behind.
I'm not going to lie here. I did not even realize it was called O.co, by the way.
Ridiculous. It used to be the Oakland Coliseum. Used to be, I don't even know what it was.
O.co. When did that happen?
A few years ago.
I missed that one.
At least 4 or 5 years ago.
No kidding? I missed that one completely. That's a ridiculous name.
Yeah. But the Athletics need a new stadium. I know the Rays recently got some plans in place to potentially move their stadium. There's been rumors that the A's are going to move to San Jose, but they signed a 10-year lease in 2014 to stay in Oakland at that crappy stadium. So they can either play there for 10 more years or 8 more years or break the lease. And
break the lease. The leases are meant to be broken.
Okay, well, their freaking owner is so damn cheap, he won't even go out and sign free agents. You think he's going to pay for a stadium he's not playing in?
It's true. Who knows? I mean, depending on who's showing him the money from another area. You know, I think there's a lot of things that factor that. I mean, the Oakland seems to be losing a lot of their professional obviously the Raiders are looking to leave, and I don't know, they just can't field teams right now, so something's got to happen.
Yeah. All right, next week we're going to do the Astros and the Angels, which will wrap up the AL West, and then we'll move on to the NL. We do have a couple mailbags for this week, so you ready to read those?
So the first one is from James from Australia. Thanks, James. Appreciate you listening to us all the way in Australia. It's pretty cool that we have Yankee fans listening to the show in Down Under. So he says, hey, guys, James from Australia, big baseball and Yankees fan. In episode 58, you mentioned CeCe and him being maybe out with the team in a situation when booze is available and consumed. What blows my mind is why anyone on the roster is even drinking during the season. As professional sports people playing most days, should they not abstain from booze for 9 months of the season? Maybe I can understand drink on the night before an off day, but anything more than that, I deem unacceptable. Look forward to your comment. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, James. And I'm also jealous that you live in Australia because I was there last year and it's an awesome country. Yeah, the whole drinking thing has always been, it depends on the fan you talk to if they get pissed about it or not. I think the logical way to approach it is that they're adults, and just like you're an adult who has to go to work 9 to 5, you don't get wasted the night before you go to work. You just manage it like a person. If you want to have one or two drinks, I don't really have an issue with that. Then on the flip side, it's like, you're making millions of dollars. You better to be in good shape and play a sport. You better not do anything to jeopardize that. So I do see both sides. I fall on the side of just don't do anything stupid. And once you jeopardize the team, then you should stop doing it. But until you jeopardize the team, I don't really care. I mean, Wade Boggs used to drink like, what, 95 beers on an airplane ride and hit 340. So some guys can handle it.
Yeah, Mickey Mantle did okay with it too. I mean, he was known to sip a few back. You know, I mean, my doctor told me I can drinking a glass of red wine every night is like the equivalent of going to the gym for an hour, and it's going to extend my life. So I take the liberties of red wine, meaning, you know, 2 to 3 beers, you know.
He said one whiskey. Glass, not one.
Anyway, so yeah, I kind of agree with you. I understand what you're saying in the sense that, you know, you shouldn't be drinking and playing this game like you're, you know, you have a responsibility to, you know, if you're an accountant and you go to work, you don't have the responsibility of the fans that are watching you, you know, crunch numbers. I mean, there's a lot more invested in this. You're a public person at that point. You're making millions of dollars. People are invested in what you're doing as an entertainment standpoint. So I think it's a different type of aspect than everybody working a 9 to 5. But I agree with you in the sense that you should just be responsible and know what you can and can't do and be an adult. Don't get yourself in bad situations. Don't do anything stupid. Don't go out and get hammered. And no, you shouldn't be drinking, you know, while you're playing and while you have a long homestand or whatever. I mean, it's just something that you should be smart about. If you're going to go out and have a beer or two after a game and that's what you're – it's just – that's it and you're just capping it at that, you're an adult. You can have a drink. I mean, it is what it is. But I agree with CeCe being in such a unique situation that I think there's just going to have to be more of a sense of awareness by not only him, obviously, but the guys around him. They need to be aware of their situations and what they're doing and who's around them and what they talk about the next day. And there's just going to have to be more of a sense of awareness. And that's just common sense, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's unrealistic to prevent adults from drinking. They're going to do they're going to do what they want to do.
So. Yeah.
But James, I do understand why you're sort of, you know, wondering what the hell is going on here, especially when you look at how much they're making. So I think the money throws a weird wrench into it.
But it definitely does. Well, and the fact that they're public, they're in the public eye, and they're the New York Yankees. I mean, they're wearing the cloth of they're wearing sacred cloth. You know,
but
what
the
I mean?
Public, so, I mean, rock stars are in the public eye too. Musicians, and all they do is. I mean, notoriously drink and do drugs. So
it's
why is
different.
That accepted? But
because it's, I don't know, it's just different. It's very different. Well, first of all, they're not a part of a team that has a band. They're part of their own band that is their own history. They're not part of a tradition. They're not part of a team that's above them. They're not like the music world is not worse because someone is.
But one could argue if a night before a concert, someone goes out and gets absolutely wasted, they're not going to play the guitar as good at that concert.
Okay, I'll give you that. That is true. If it sacrifices them from playing a show, but I will also say that there are a lot more musicians who can play inebriated well than there are baseball players who can play baseball with a ball coming at you 100 miles an hour well.
And a lot of times
while inebriated.
a lot of times musicians write their best music while inebriated.
That is true. So the comparison, while I don't think, I think is more apples to oranges than apples to apples, but I see what you're saying.
All right. Thanks, James. And look forward to hearing some more mailbags from you this coming season. The next one is from Paulie D. I don't think the Jersey Shore Paulie D, but it might be. As a Bomber faithful, we're all ecstatic about Judgment Day. What are your guys' predictions on what the great day, as when the great day approaches, how big of an impact could Judge have this year? If I could read out loud.
First of all, we're going to really improve on our reading this week. That's one thing we're both going to do. I'm glad I didn't have to read that one because I butchered the last one. Thanks, Paulie. I appreciate you writing in. I have managed expectations, I think, for Aaron Judge. I don't think he's going to be a part of the season until September call-ups. I think September call-ups is when we're going to see him, contingent on him making the appropriate progressions with his offense, with his swing. You know, I think they could put up with defensive woes from a guy like Aaron Judge if he's not like the greatest defensive player in right field. But if he still has that long swing, if he's striking out too much, if you're seeing him, you know, struggle at AAA like he did when he made that transition from AA to AAA, I think the Yankees will not bring him up because the Yankees are very well known for not wanting to bring a guy up to crush their hopes and stunt their growth. That's just their mindset. That's what they've thought for years, and I think that's what they'll hold on to. But I think if he does well, if he's showing that he can hit these 500-foot bombs that we're seeing him hit in spring training, in batting practice, I should say, then he's a guy that they're going to bring up in September because he's a person that can absolutely help at the end of a game in a pinch hit situation. I don't think he's going to be an everyday player, but I think we'll see him sporadically, especially if the Yankees are in the hunt.
Yeah, the Yankees are not known for bringing up their rookies early. You see exceptions like with Severino and Bird last year, but they came up because of injuries. So if Beltran goes down, then maybe they, and Judge has been having a solid year, maybe they do bring him up. But barring injuries, I just don't see them rushing him, like you said. He'll get a September call-up if he's had a good season, because that's a reward all players in AAA get. If you had a good season, and you're not some journeyman, you know, 38-year-old, then you're going to get your reward of being called up in September. So the impact is really 2017. And what he can bring to the table in 2017. It's going to be such an exciting year because it might be the first time we really see Judge and Bird and maybe even Sanchez, you know, as full-time starting players, which we have not had that many young players on this team in a long time.
Yeah, and it's just exciting seeing the guy. You know, he gets a lot of attention, obviously, because of the size and just his physique. But if he can really put it together and become the baseball player that we all hope he can be, I mean, this guy's going to be something absolutely special. He's just so big, and you don't see that many guys his size that are able to play professional baseball. Just one, they don't play baseball. They play other sports. They're usually playing football or basketball. And two, these guys it's very difficult for a guy that size to take a swing and be that athletic to make it to Major League Baseball. So he's really just a freak of an athlete, and I hope that he can progress. And there's nothing to say that he can't progress. I mean, the Yankees coaching staff in the minor leagues have always had glowing reports of how he's adjusted to the different levels. And while he did have his struggles going to AAA, I think it's something that he can definitely adjust to. I mean, he's proved that he's a very good athlete and has the ability to do so. So I'm looking forward to seeing him.
I also hope he keeps number 99 because that will allow us to do episode number 99 in honor of him.
There you go. We could do it anyway. we probably will do it anyway.
I don't think there's any other number 99s. Maybe Ricky Wild Thing Vaughn, but... All right, so let's wrap this up. Thanks for Paulie and also James for submitting mailbags. You can submit mailbags at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast or find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and ask us a question that way, and we'll read it on the show. Don't forget about the voicemail line, which is 646-480-0342.
Nice job.
Scott, any last words before we get out of here?
You know, we had some of you guys had sent in some mailbags, and it's totally on me. My apologies. We have growing pains here, just like everywhere else. I had some issues with the website. They're completely taken care of. All of the mailbags are now coming directly to my Gmail account from the website. So I will see them. Please write them in. Bring them on. You know, usually when we get something, we put it on air. I mean, this is something that we really enjoy doing. We like talking to you guys. We want this to be a very fan-friendly. We want your voice to be heard. So do that. And then also, like Andrew said, the voicemail, I'll give it a call, and we'll put you on air. So looking forward to next week. And we're only, what, a week and a half, Andrew, you and me? The bromance down in Tampa. The two of us are going to be going to a couple spring training games and seeing the sights of Tampa, Florida.
Yep, that's right. Bring your PJs. It's going to be a slumber party. That's a terrible way to end the episode. All right, we'll talk to you guys next time.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.